This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
News story.
Now, I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news. Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
The Los Angeles Lakers are being sold to Josh Kushner and Bob Iger for $12.5 billion, a record-breaking price, according to Ramona Shelburne at ESPN. Now, this is, you want to pay attention to this, Mike, because we're talking about NBA expansion. These were the businessmen that were involved in the expansion process in Las Vegas. You know, Las Vegas was one, Seattle was one. They were involved in potentially bringing a team to Las Vegas, but they turned at the last minute. They pivoted to then say, we're going to make an aggressive offer to buy the Lakers from Mark Walter, who had purchased a controlling interest in the team from the Buss family last year for a then-franchise valuation of approximately $10 billion. So they say, Kushner and Iger said in a statement, as lifelong NBA fans, we are deeply honored for the opportunity to become stewards of the Los Angeles Lakers, one of the most iconic sports franchises in the world. We have immense respect for the leadership and vision of Jerry and Jeannie Buss. Our long-term commitment is to build on that foundation, compete at the highest level, and serve this extraordinary team, its fans, and the city of Los Angeles.
So what's interesting is Bob Iger used to be the CEO of Disney. So
Okay, that's where that name is. Okay.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe this will help ABC get a bigger deal, since ABC is also owned by Disney.
Yeah, maybe. But it sounded like they wanted to dip their toes into the, not dip their toes, jump all in on an NBA franchise. And they're like, rather than starting from the ground up in Las Vegas, let's just buy one of the most established franchises in sports, the Los Angeles Lakers.
I think this is probably a better idea for them. He's already popular. It's in the, well, I mean, nothing's filmed in L.A. anymore. So if you bought the Atlanta Hawks.
The sale will still need to be approved from NBA's Board of Governors, and that process can take several weeks. The next board meeting is set for next month in New York. Good time to buy the Lakers, though. Not that LeBron's leaving, but Luka Doncic. You've got him locked down as a franchise cornerstone, so good time
Mark
to buy
Cuban's
him.
Going, damn it.
So this WNBA thing, I get it. I don't watch, and I'm not going to. This is a drama. I will say it's entertaining. It's annoying. Indiana Fever coach, Stephanie White. She, come on. Faith, where are you at on this one? Faith is like our resident Hall of Famer that knows about the WNBA more than most of our listeners. So I want her take on this too. So she did speak about this because everyone's pissed that she didn't really go to bat for Sophie Cunningham. Instead, she defended DeJounte Carrington on the foul, saying that's just how she plays. She's going hard. Didn't respond to the tweet that said white privilege, and then that she tagged Indiana Fever to this. She did want to address, I guess, the negativity surrounding her as the head coach of the Indiana Fever. Here it is. You tell me what you think.
No, I'm going to start today. You know, this isn't necessarily for those people that are in this room. This is more for an online community that's trying to create narratives that simply don't exist. Trying to create a fabrication or distortion of who I am, of what I'm about. Our players' success, our players' health and wellness, our players' safety is always a top priority for me. One of the things I pride myself on is my relationships with players. For those who have anything to say about the play in the last game, I didn't see the play in real time. I went straight to a press conference. I thought the play got called right. Thankfully, Sophie's okay. Was it egregious? Absolutely. When you have a chance to watch that over and over and over on replay, you can see that. I didn't have that in real time.
Were there any
I take personally any suggestions that I don't 100% always have my players back. I ride with them 10 toes down all the time. All the time. They know that. It's a shame that we can't have an opportunity to talk about what great basketball they're playing. Because they are f***ing playing. The reality is, with me, I will always lead with love. I will always lead with grace. I will always lead with humility. And I will always lead with integrity. Doesn't mean I'll always get it right. I'm also human. The hate, the fear-mongering, the divisiveness, the stuff that's trying to hijack our league will not win. It won't win. We are united. We are connected. We will not be divided. Every day these women put their ass on the line. Every day. When they go low, we go high. Love will win. Grace will win. Humility will win. And kindness will win. I stand by them. I will always stand by them. Everybody else can go to hell.
Okay, first off, my favorite part of this, love will win. Grace will win. Nope. Humility will win. And kindness will win. Everybody else can go to hell. Wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Those are two different things. Kindness will win unless you're not kind to me and you go to hell. Boy, okay. It's like that quote, that tweet, that viral thing that everybody says, love all that love all, but you can't possibly do that. You can't love everyone because you're going to hate somebody. And if you're saying you hate, you don't love the ones that are not loving all, then that would mean you hate someone. So then you're not one of the love all people. So again, anyway, that's just a funny thing to me. Now, her saying we won't be divided. Okay, she says she didn't see the play. If you watch her at the end of the play, Stephanie White storms onto the court and goes up to she's surrounding the ref and DeJounte Carrington. She's like she didn't even look at Sophie. She's not even talking to Sophie. Sophie's gone off camera. Doesn't even say, "Hey, you good? You good, girl? You good?" No, I'm beeline right to the referees and DeJounte Carrington. If you didn't see the play, why were you the first off the bench and out onto the floor? If you didn't see the play, this sounds like an orchestrated Hollywood speech. That's what that's what that sounded like. Didn't sound like most coaches hear something like this and say, "Hey, first off, like anybody that thinks that I'm not about my players, they know in that locker room, they know what I'm about. So we're going to move on from that one." That's how you do it. Not this. No, was it agreed? Yeah, it was terrible. No, the first time you said that's how she plays. That's how she plays. What changed?
You're calling her dirty, essentially. If you are a head coach, even if you know your player is wrong, you still have to stand up for your player. Don't stand up for the other team, because that's
up
how
for
the locker room disappears.
Whether you've seen that play or not, you can say, "Hey, I didn't see the full play." What were you watching then? I'm just curious. What were you watching? The ball handler is going to the rim, and you have a defender going up to try to block, but then it turns into a clothesline. What are you watching? The play has been over now. Like, the setup to whatever led to Sophie Cunningham getting to the rim is over. Focus now goes to, I know I'm not a head coach, but what are you watching? What are you watching at that point? There's no one-on-one battles over here that you're paying attention to. This is a breakaway kind of layup situation and a defender going to block the shot. So saying you didn't see it is crazy to me. You had to know she fell down and got fouled, and they reviewed the call. They issued her a flagrant two, so you knew that. They kicked her out of the game, and yet your initial response was still, that's how she plays. That's who you went to bat for. Don't tell us we're idiots. She's telling us we're an online community. This ain't an online community, bro. This is the media world was going at you and how you handled this. She's a terrible coach. They cannot get out of their own way. If If I were the Indiana Fever, I'd move on from her as soon as now. I think I'd be done now. And I know the players are all going to bat for her and all this stuff, but
they have to.
Yeah, they have to. And I didn't, like, we will not be divided. You're the one that created that by not going to bat for your player initially when here's the facts that you knew. You knew the facts. Whether you were watching, you must have been watching maybe, I don't know, maybe Everybody Loves Raymond on your iPad or something. Because if you didn't see that play, I don't know what you're watching. Michael Malone, Greg Popovich, these coaches, they're watching the play take place. They're seeing it. They might not see the full-on contact, but here are the facts. She got issued a flagrant 2 foul upon review. They kicked her out of the game. You knew that. And yet you still did not go to bat in that moment for Sophie Cunningham, and you went to bat for Carrington saying that's how she plays, and then you come back a couple days later saying, well, I never saw the play. You knew that WNBA officials kicked DeJounte Carrington out of the game for a flagrant 2 foul. You knew that, and yet you gave her the benefit of the doubt. So don't tell us we're idiots. We saw it. This is awful, awful look by the WNBA. It's an unserious leak.
Sounds like politics to me. I think that what she should have said was, you know, yeah, she plays really hard, and this one was just a little too hard. She got the flagrant foul, and I'm standing up for my player. I'm glad everybody's okay.
A million things she could have said differently. Instead, she goes and blames the online community.
This is why movies aren't as popular anymore, because like you have actors and actresses going, well, you know what? Our movie is great. It's just the fans aren't coming out.
Right. And we don't appeal to the 40-year-old white guy.
You got it. Okay. You and I, you know, we make jokes a lot, but we at least have some self-awareness. It's like none of these people have self-awareness.
They don't get it. 17 minutes after the hour, Keeling Me Softly with the Denver Post, Sean Keeler coming up next. Keep it here on The Whole Show. Powered by Mosquito Joe, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Stay in the know.
I drink and I know things.
Listen to Good Morning NoCo weekdays at 6 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, this is Brock Wisney, former UNC men's basketball player, and you're listening to The Whole Show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Some call him genius, legend, ladies' man, the best to ever observe the game. We want to keep him humble, so we call him Sean. This is Keeling Me Softly with Denver Post columnist Sean Keeler.
Sean Keeler joining us now. It is time for our weekly version of Keeling Me Softly. First off, Sean, were you able to join the Broncos in watching the new Spider-Man movie? Were you invited to this, or is that just for the players?
It was just for the players. I did not get invited. I was so hurt. I actually still haven't seen it. So it is on my list, but I was not invited. No, but I'm glad that they were more than willing to talk about it, and I guess I'm glad that they went. Time will tell.
Well, and this is going to upset Michael back there, but Sean Payton, not a fan of Spider-Man, apparently. Yeah, not a big fan.
I did. I was the one who did ask him. I'm sure I got no love on that from the Denver radio yokels. But I did ask him about that. He played ball. You never know with Sean, you know, how he's going to react to something a little more left field. It could, you know, I thought he was pretty good for taking a left field thing. And Sean being Sean, he can't help but note his personal opinion on the topic, which we always appreciate, too.
So, Sean, is this something kind of new for Sean? Because I've been seeing a lot of people make stuff of this, like, oh, is he softening up in his older age, letting the guys go break for something like this? What does that mean to you? Anything that they went to a movie, or is that just, this is kind of a neat story?
It's kind of a neat story. Guys have been going to, I mean, Google Paul Brown and Bambi, the old coach. I mean, NFL coaches have been dragging their players to movies. Sean knows his history better than anybody, for like decades. So this is not, it's unique because it's the idea that, one, that Sean would be a little more lighthearted about a really tough time of year, although he's a lot more enlightened than some of his rep would let you believe. And two, that Nick Benito told Kay Adams that. Basically, if anything that comes out, but if you Google Broncos Kay Adams, that's like 18 talk show topics for the rest of the week, because she gets their guards down in ways that that we are not allowed to, or generally cannot. So it was one of those. Nick Benito was one who said, "Boy, I don't think Sean would have done that 3 years ago." I think he said that Monday. He said that Monday. So that's what made it a thing. And you know, now we're in a world of, for a decade now, we've lived in a world of three paragraph stories where if something is a thing, you write about a clip that turns into a thing, and then Google decides it's a thing, and you're talking about it, and we're talking about it, and let's move on to another thing.
Sean Keeler joining us, Denver Post. Michael and I, both big fans of this story. Not big fans of the, like J.K. Dobbins, Aaron Gordon comparison, although I get you, and I actually agree with you.
I agree with you. I've got a few thumbs down on that. You're not alone.
No,
I'll defend it on the record. I'll defend it on the quality.
No, it's
I'll defend it on the playing time.
I defend it, too, because I can't count how many times I've said on this show, if Aaron Gordon's healthy, the Nuggets do this. Yep. If J.K. Dobbins is healthy, the Broncos do this. So I do agree with you.
There's a parade. They're not just a Super Bowl. There may be a parade.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I agree 100%. I think what I – more of like I don't like it because it sucks, but it's a real comparison.
But
saying – Jonah Coleman, because Michael back there, he's a big Washington guy, and you and I have talked a lot about Jonah Coleman a lot, and I think, that's the tough part. I don't want to root for Jonah Coleman, but I actually think I think he's good. I think you're 100% right. You said looks like the steal of the 2026 draft, and I think you're 100%.
He does, and that's a good thing, and we joke about it. But he was running over our Rammies at this time last year. I mean, we knew this was a good dude. And Coleman is a classic case of the NFL. Well, time will tell, but I think certainly for the first 2 weeks of camp, he's been the best runner here, and they've given him appropriately and wisely the most amount of looks and more looks for the first team than people thought, which is why people get really, really excited here. Two, it's another case of the NFL. Why did they get him in the fourth round? Well, the NFL gets hung up on certain traits of certain guys. Quarterbacks are tight, right? Running backs, if it's not height, it's speed. He's not fast. Let's just get the big negative out of the way. It's the old, I love the movie Major League from 1989. Go back to that. I have those things I can't recite for FCC reasons. But, they ask, how do they get Pedro Serrano? How do we get that guy? I think we're going to be seeing in a month, hopefully, certainly after the preseason, with Jonah Coleman, if things trend the way they're trending, we're going to say, how did they get that guy? His version of not being able to hit the curveball, which was the Serrano thing as to why that Cleveland team ended up with him, his Pedro Serrano weakness was he's never run better than a 4.55 official timing that I've seen. And I think that's what he had with the pro day. He's not a home run hitter. But he's probably the fourth fastest back of those big four they've got. But he does. And why did he give it to him? There are a couple things. He's a consistent doubles guy. He can block. And he does not fumble. And you're Sean in this offense. What does Sean hate more than anything? Negative plays, long. And Sean is way more kind of a metrics guy than you'd let on. He hates third and forevers. He hates second and forevers. Jonah Coleman, in theory, in much of the way the Bo has been, is a guy from the metrics purposes that if he's healthy, is someone who's going to keep you out of negative plays. And never mind that he can do also that he can do everything that J.K. Dobbins can do, which was kind of the point, because R.J. Harvey can't. And that's not knocking R.J., that's just being realistic about where he is. He's not the same guy. That makes him work well with Dobbins, but then as we saw, when you suddenly don't have Dobbins, then you suddenly have a lot of what I call scat backs, and R.J. is a really good scat back. Coleman's not a scat back. He's a workhorse, and you need to know the workhorse.
Oh, yeah, I remember watching watching a few of those games, and you mentioned it. He had almost 200 yards against the Rams and a couple touchdowns. They line him up in a lot of different positions at Washington, too. Like, as far as running back, he could line up in an I formation as the fullback, get a handoff and do something with it and get outside. As you said, he's just kind of one of those all-around running backs. He's not necessarily overwhelmingly great in one aspect, but he's pretty good in almost every aspect.
Yeah, and that's, again, the like-for-like, more of a like-for-like with Dobbins. And a compliment to Dobbins is why he's a 1A guy, is he can also do everything. And you had to suddenly put him in the slot, keep him as a third, can you play him three downs? I mean, everything is situational now and is even more so given the kind of metrics world we're in now. R.J. Harvey is not a three-down back. he's probably a one or two or passing down back. Let's be real about that. And Jaleel McLaughlin, same thing. Tyler Bidet, yeah, probably even less so, but yeah, probably. I mean, they're situational things. The two guys who you would play on three downs and feel good about getting the ball between the tackles to on first and second down, and basically first down. Because if everything is open to you, this is so cliche, but it's true. You know, it's why tight ends are important, but coaches don't want personnel to give away tendencies. When you have RJ or Tyler, or maybe just some, maybe less so McLaughlin in the game, that is, what are you thinking through the defense? They're going to throw the ball, or this is a short pass, or this is something. The point of Jonah Coleman is one of the strengths also of JK, is that when they're in the game, anything is possible. And that's a helpless feeling for a defense. That's what you don't want, is I have to be ready for anything. You want a tendency that lines that up. What's good about Coleman so far and how they will plan to use him, I think, is that he keeps that mystery. He keeps that strategic edge for you where you're not going to know or presume what that play is going to be, given that it's Sean and Davis calling it. And that's what you want out of any tailback, but I think that's what those two guys give you and why they're going to be really the thing to watch. And other people pointed out, they pointed this out yesterday to me when I was here, like, well, you know, because J.K. went off the field Monday, coincidentally as well, with joining the soft tissue club. He was back at it yesterday. And they're like, you know, I guarantee you, someone said to me, one of the reasons he's back out there today is he feels Jonah coming. And I think there's some, I despite that contract, despite everything, and J.K.'s not a dump. J.K.'s a smart guy. I think he reads a lot of social media, too. God bless him. I like him. He's a good guy. And a heck of a player. It's just a health thing. But I think he knows that, too. And he knows kind of the way that Cortland knows with Pat Bryant. They drafted your replacement. Like, they drafted a guy that if you go down and it doesn't get better or you can't come back, you may not have something to come back to. And, you know, it's not healthy for the player, but I think that's healthy for the franchise, and that's where they are.
You see Jonah Coleman maybe taking over that role? I mean, because we all kind of, you hate the injury thing, but yeah, history would tell us J.K. Dobbins going to miss some time. And if he does Jonah Coleman jump in, even as soon as his rookie year, and maybe not completely take over, but just warrant a hell of a lot more carries throughout the rest of the season?
If you give me a qualifier, if depending on how hurt Dobbins is and what time of year it is, yeah, absolutely. Like, he is, that's the point of it. He is so that you can just use, again, Harvey and McLaughlin and maybe Bidet, you know, in situational thing, as situational backs, or in weird down and distance, or long down and distance, or just kind of mix it up, or use multiple combinations of them. But the short answer is yes. That's exactly why he's here. Like, if everything is to plan, I would be shocked if the answer is to turn it back to R.J. Harvey to be the number two and to run R.J. Harvey between the tackles, because we saw there was some folly there. Now, could it be better? Yeah. Has it been a little better at camp so far? Yeah. Is there a lot to prove? Yeah. I think that's a TBD. And if R.J. – and again, back to the tendencies thing, if they see R.J. and they think pass, well, then your inclination is going to be let's run a draw here, let's run it with him and see what happens. We can try that, but I would think ultimately – If things are trending the way they're trending, and they may not, it's got 12 days of preseason camp. We get so wound up because it's the first thing back and first impressions end up meaning a lot, maybe more than they should. I want to see games. I get more wound up about what I see in certain games than I do with what I see in practices that aren't team on another team, which they're not going to have this year, because those are great tells. If the Packers or somebody were coming here to play them in a practice, or the Cowboys, whatever, those are where you get better indicators than just hat on hat, one on one, ones on twos in practice. But we got to get something. And we're going to see a lot more, I think, when we see them in game action on Friday and have a better picture of how they want this to look.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That name certainly circled Jonah Coleman to watch out for on Friday. Sean, my man, I know you got to run. I know you got work to do. Man, you got Bronco stuff to get to.
I do. You got to go watch Bo's ankle for you.
Ankle looking good, though, right? Everything's fine.
And I'm surprised you didn't ask me whether I'd play him or how much I'd play him. I was bracing for that. I would, but with all these preseason games, I think the only way you're going to know, I mean, playing on turf, it stinks. It's not ideal. You got to rip that Band-Aid off. The only way that people aren't going to have doubts about, and maybe even the player can have doubts about what you have coming back, is to go test it. So I'd be tempted to run him out there that first drive, give him a drive, see what it looks like, you know, run a boot and, you know, don't put him in dangerous situations, and then go to the next week, and then get to the home games, and just keep ramping it up bit by bit by bit. But we will see.
Yep.
So it'll be fun.
Makes for interesting storylines on Friday, no question. Sean, appreciate you, my man, and we'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
All right, brother. Sounds good. See you.
Sean Keeler, Denver Post. Yeah, I mean, he goes barely 2 weeks into training camp, and J.K. Dobbins looks like the Aaron Gordon of Broncos country. Fortunately for Sean Payton, Jonah Coleman looks like the steal of the 2026 NFL draft. Every day, he and Pat Bryant are getting more and more talk. More and more. Those are the two guys. This is why preseason matters. This is why these training camps matter, because guys we weren't talking about, we get to learn about, and we're going to be ready. Educated sports fans are going to be ready to and know who those guys are going to be come season. And this also helps your fantasy lineup stuff, too.
Yeah, and on top of that, if you have two great wide receivers or two solid wide receivers who can get first downs and a speedster, I mean, if you want another draft pick for next year.
They might have a complete running back in Jonah Coleman. They might have a home run hitter in J.K. Dobbins. They have a home run hitter in Jalen Waddle. They have a more of a consistent receiver in Cortland Sutton. They got a pass-catching running back in R.J. Harvey. And if they can get Evan Engram going, they could cover all the skill positions and have almost the perfect picture in every skill position coming up this year for the Broncos.
Oh, by the way, they have a phenomenal defense. We're talking offense. Like, we're used to talking Broncos defense.
That's the thing. We're talking about offensive because we already know what the defense is. I mean, the biggest thing for them is who's replacing John Franklin Myers and what's going on with Jonathan Cooper. But the rest is like, okay, you got Nick Benito, you got Patrick Surtain, you got Hufanga, you got Allen, you got a lot of studs on that defensive side of the ball. Offensively, last year, this time last year, Mike, it was who are the guys? Who stands out? And last year was like, okay, can Evan Engram be big? You know, can J.K. Dobbins stay healthy? Evan Engram was not big, and J.K. Dobbins did not stay healthy. Now you have, all right, we already know Waddle's going to be good. How good is this going to make Sutton? How good is this going to make that third guy? And it sounds like it's going to be Pat Bryant. How good is Davis Webb's play calling going to open up Bo Nix's game where with a healthy combination of a real run game, there's a lot of excitement surrounding the offensive side of the ball for the Broncos. Speaking of offensive side of the ball, I don't always agree with a quarterback competition this late in training camp and all that, whether it's college, whether it's football, and sometimes it annoys the crap out of me. There is one team a few miles behind me that I 100% agree with a quarterback controversy, quarterback competition, and it's heating up in Fort Collins. Let's talk about that and how Jim Mora is handling Haas Haney and Kason Farrar in this battle between two quarterbacks that are both, I think both are going to be really entertaining, whichever way he decides to go. First, let's jump out and get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
Here in Colorado, doing business is more than a transaction. It's a handshake, a neighbor helping a neighbor. And at Bank of Colorado, that's the way it's been since 1978. I'm Sean Ostoff, president of Bank of Colorado. And as Colorado's largest family-owned bank, we're built on personal service and a commitment to giving back. From local schools to community events, we invest where you live, work, and grow. Because this is more than business. It's home. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
This is Nico Carvacho, former CSU Ram, current pro basketball player, and you're listening to The Hall Show with my good friend, Brady Hall.
Welcome back to the show. There's a certain group of Rams fans, and I heard Tanner Schwint moaning about this morning with Kevin Lytle, great Rams insider that is always on KFKA. Love having him here. There is a certain group of Rams fans, Mike, that are like, oh, this quarterback controversy. You know the old adage? What is the old adage? If you have a quarterback competition, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. That isn't always true. Now, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Locke, NFL comparison, sure. I'll go with you on that. That felt like the battle of two backup quarterbacks. One of them is going to be your starter. Rams fans, listen to me. You just dealt with, and I think one of the biggest downfalls for Jay Norvell was how he handled his quarterback position. He was all in on Clay Millen, and then he wasn't. And then once he made that decision to move on from Clay, which I've outlined that whole thing because I was pretty close to it because we were close to Clay, he doubled down on it with BFN, with Braden Fowler Nicolosi. That was his guy. He went out, made national news talking about how teams were poaching him, defended that guy through thick and thin. And I get that. They're younger people, so you treat them differently. But there was really never a push. Once BFN was named quarterback, that was it. There wasn't an announcement, hey, we're going to open up the competition this week. No, when Clay was pulled, it was done. And I know that for a fact. When he was pulled from that Washington State game, it was over. There was no open competition. It was going to be BFN. And it looked good for a moment, and then it wasn't. And really, his time will be forgettable as a CSU Ram. The most you'll remember of him was Jay Norvell saying K-State's trying to get him for $600,000. He had no push. There was no competition for him until he lost his job. Now you get a guy that came with him from UConn in Kason Farrar. Yes, going to have a battle with that all year, Michael. Going to be fun. And Haas Haney, the transfer that was with Oklahoma State last year. I saw 5 minutes of practice yesterday. Okay, maybe 40, 45. Yes, they look good. They look the part. They look fun. Yeah, it's all good. But Jim Moore is telling you, he's not going to tell you who the quarterback is. Both guys are getting a lot of reps, and it's still kind of 50-50 at this point. I think having a quarterback competition in this current timeline for the Rams is the perfect time. It doesn't always mean, well, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. What if they're both really good? Is that never a case? What if you have two good quarterbacks that you feel, if I start this guy, I think we can win some games. If I start this guy, we can win some games. It kind of worked out.
It wasn't a quarterback competition then, but, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Bledsoe.
That was exactly what Brian brought up.
Quarterbacks.
Yes. We've had several examples where it's like, didn't Aaron Rodgers back up Brett Favre? I mean, that was one that was pretty good.
And Jordan Love backed up Aaron Rodgers.
Jalen Hurts, didn't he back up, Miami quarterback, former Miami Dolphins quarterback?
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah. Weren't those two guys on the same team at one point for Alabama? And Jalen Hurts was like, dude, I'm good enough to play. If he didn't transfer, he might not be in the NFL. He might not have won a Super Bowl. There are plenty of examples where it's not the old adage of if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. Sometimes you just have two quarterbacks. And I think, based on what I'm hearing from our insiders and my tiny glimpse yesterday and what Jim Mora is telling us, I'm putting those three, that's the information that we have right now, that's leading to me to believe the Rams have two capable guys at quarterback, and either choice might be a pretty good one.
I mean, I agree with you on that. Most of the time, I think if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. In this case, there are two differences. One, this is a rebuilding team. So it's okay to have more than one talented
Let's
quarterback.
Let's open up a competition.
And two,
yes.
If they're both really that good, but the only difference is, you know, one runs better, the other slings better, you have to decide in the next month. And here's another thing. Why would you tell Wyoming who you're starting
right.
quarterback?
And Ed Lamb's doing the same thing on Football 52. I asked about key position battles, and he won't go into it. Like, he just kind of laughs it off and moves on to a different and I even said, I was like, Ed, let's be honest here. You know, and I know, that some of your competitors have listened to this podcast. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but if I were a competitor, I would listen to every piece of content I could get from a coach. And if I hear that he has his own podcast, I'm listening to that podcast. If I'm Weber State, I'm telling you, I'd listen to that podcast. You're not going to get much, but because Ed's not going to give that away. Same thing in pressers and all that stuff. So yeah, Jim's not going to announce that. And we just are kind of left guessing at this stage. Based on the information we have, I thought Haas Haney before I went to practice yesterday. And then I started thinking, I like the size of this other dude. I like Kason Farrar. They both seemed to run the offense pretty good. I didn't see a ton of mistakes. In our 40 minutes of watching, I didn't see a ton of mistakes. A couple from running backs, not seeing making the right reads, hitting the right holes. A couple drop passes, nothing major.
But from what I saw, based on that and gut feeling, I think it's going to be the UConn kid.
Are they both the same age? So one junior, another junior? Because if they're both juniors, you might have an automatic transfer unless something happens during the season.
You mean one would go?
Yeah, like, one would probably go.
Well, and let's see. Let me double check that for you real quick, Mike. That's a good question. I was wondering the same thing, and then I didn't pull it up because we got to talking. Let's see. No, they are both redshirt freshmen.
Okay, so whoever loses the battle
is that right?
Probably going to transfer somewhere.
Or you hang on and
if they
both.
Hang on, that would be great.
Haas played for Oklahoma State in the 20. He had the 2025 season with TCU, and then he was with Oklahoma State in 2025. He played four games for TCU, so that would only count. Wouldn't he be a redshirt sophomore then?
I think so. That might be a mistype there.
He played four games for TCU, so that would have, and this is again, that this is before the new 5-for-5 thing came out, that he only played four games, so that would have kept his, given him a red shirt. And then he was with Oklahoma State.
Was he the first half of the season and then got hurt?
I think it was toward the end for TCU, and then for Oklahoma State, he started the 2025 season opener for Oklahoma State, and then he got hurt, missed the rest
of
the season.
Okay, so that was the one, I think, against Oregon.
So he got an injury red shirt too, right? Can't in the old rules, can't you get a freshman red shirt and then an injury red shirt?
One, yeah, I believe. So, I think there has been at least one player who's been on a college football team or playing college football for 7 years.
So they're both redshirt freshmen. Farrar played in two games at UConn in 2025 and redshirted. So they got a long road ahead of them.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a battle still between two guys that maybe we're going to grow with here.
Yeah. Well, I still think one's probably going to transfer, because if they're both really this good, then someone else is going to want to pay for a quarterback.
I don't know if they're both really this good, but you got one guy who has experience playing for TCU for a little bit and then Oklahoma State, but you got another guy that was in your system. So which one are you going with? Guy that has bigger school experience?
Against better opponents.
Against better opponents, or a guy that was in your system? I'm gonna go out and say it's going to be Kason Farrar.
I think that this is another reason why it's such a toss-up. Like, one might be more talented than the other, I'm not sure, but who knows?
I don't really know. I have nothing to tell you. That's based on a gut feel, and that's probably just because he's UConn, he was in the system. 49 the time, apparently. 49 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, this is the whole show. What did we learn coming up next?
Broncos football.
One, two, three.
Then you want Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hall.
All right, what did we learn today, Michael? I think we learned that a lot of people are getting hyped about Jonah Coleman. That's the name, Jonah Coleman. Watch out for him. He's your boy, Mike. He's your guy.
A lot of people already are learning what I already knew.
I know, and that part of me hates to admit that. But
go Dogs.
We learned that the WNBA is kind of a wreck. Everybody loves Romano, obviously. Just got this from Shams. Russell Westbrook is retired. Had a cup of coffee with the Denver Nuggets, so we'll talk about that probably more tomorrow on the whole show. Mike, did you learn anything?
I learned lots of things. I learned that people are learning what I already knew.
Oh, you already said that.
And we have 5 seconds left.
All right, good night, Northern Colorado.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.